You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Belt to Loda, the officially unofficial podcast for The Expanse on Amazon Prime. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 6, Episode 4, titled Readout, which I think is the Belter word for all the information that's scrolling by on the screen. Look at the readout. I have no Belter accent.
I thought they said they read the inner's lies and they doubt them. It's their TLDR, too long didn't read. Mm-hmm. Readout.
What'd you think of the episode?
I like the episode. I think if people at this point in the season are going to say anything negative about the episode, it's going to be the fact that this is hurtling at a fairly breakneck pace.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll do something crazy in the next two episodes, but also it feels like it's easier to predict what's going to happen next. Like, they have a clear, because they don't have a traditional 13 or 10 episodes to work with where you can have a couple of red herrings. It's a traditional, show threat, develop countermeasure, show it, we have a threat, countermeasure, and then deployment, threat, countermeasure, deployment. We've seen that with the asteroid attacks and then the Azure Dragon and the assault on it. And now they got the upper hand. And then Marco's got protomolecule ships. So this episode, they showed the threat. I predict, not having seen it, that the next opening of the next episode is going to be about the Martian fleet. It's going to go storm the gate, and they're going to get thrown back by Marco's super ships, and the rest of the inners are going to go, oh, holy fucking shit. And, the countermeasure will be, I don't know, but like, they'll probably develop it by the end of the episode, and the final episode will all about being, that being deployed. So it doesn't feel like there is as many like, oh my God, I don't know what they're going to do next, because it's the end of the story and they have to get there and they've got 6 hours to do it. So, but I'm like, I was thinking about this morning. It's like, is that really a problem? Because yes, they're moving fast, but like, they're not sacrificing character moments. In fact, they're taking several minutes out of the episode just to listen to country music to mourn the loss of a friend. So it's like, you're not getting shortchanged. It's just, kind of end of series itis, mm-hmm. where it's like everything has just been set up to knock down and that's it. What are you thinking about these first four?
I think that's all mildly interesting. I know, how this book ends and how I think the series will end at the end of this book.
What do you think about the burn rate of the material? I guess that's what we've talked in other, where you've like, in some seasons you're like, I can't fucking believe we're 75% of the book. It's only episode three.
I'm starting to feel the reality is sinking in that we only have two episodes of this show.
Right.
Left, period.
Not
of this season, not of like, oh, we're at the halfway point. No, man, we're 2/3 of the way through the end of this show. So,
well, we might get more, but that's all,
Yeah, and there's still a lot to do.
Speculation at this point.
I think that it is certainly all doable in the next two episodes. They might have to lose a couple of those character beats. Although I think there's still at least one more to play out with Philip. I think like we've seen a lot of, as you said before the podcast when we were talking, two steps forward, one step back sort of stuff. With him, and I think that feels real, that feels natural and rewarding, but we haven't seen the totality of that yet. I think he keeps like, we talked also about this readout title, like what could that mean, and I almost felt like there was an emotional readout from Philip this episode where he is fortifying his position as Marco's son, right, as a Belter, as every time he he has these moments of, I think, like humanity where he starts to go, oh God, I've done a terrible thing and I should be ashamed of it. Then something happens to get him indignant again. And, and then he goes on these tears of being like a true Belter, you know? And I think that hasn't totally played out. So I'm excited to see how that goes in the final two episodes.
Just to be clear, because maybe people don't know, a redoubt is like a military fortification, but it's always like a temporary, or like the idea of it's like been hastily constructed to retreat to a place of defense to. Like, think like a wooden stockade, you know, like a square thing with like wooden fences, and or maybe it's just the earthen works kind of thing. But it, the essential thing is it's a temporary place of refuge to kind of regroup and attack from. And I'm looking and I'm like, is it Ciri Station? Is it like, you know, is it Marco's spin supply depot? Are they going really metaphoric and it's actually like the redoubt is in all our hearts? Like, you know, the Monica is trying to build a hastily constructed redoubt that we can all emotionally retreat to then, you know, counterattack Marco with, like, I like your suggestion too, that this is like, you know, another metaphor internal at the Marco, like he's, and I'm sorry, Marco, Philip, he's trying to build up some of his internal defenses. And
yeah,
and I think what they're doing with Marco is some of the most interesting stuff to do it on the show, because like, to me, it's very, this feels very realistic that you grow up idolizing and being brainwashed by one parent, and then you meet the other and you find out that they're not at all what your other parent said they were. And you also have the issue of like your parent, you know, not living up their ideals, but they continue to lie, manipulate, and you see the stuff breaking down in real time, and the way they're doing it, they're not like, I could see a lot of people saying like, ah, I don't understand why they're giving Philip and this fucking new guy some rando red shirt like all this quality screen time, but like, because all this precious screen time, but like, this is the whole game, man. This is Philip figuring out in real time, oh, my dad said that series are a bunch of well wallas that are fat and lazy because they just want to serve the inners. And he sees this guy's brother who has a condition, can't go in space, would love to. And also, if he was a regular Belter and if he was gung-ho and charging into the Free Navy, this guy would have died because no one would be there to look forward to. Like, all these kind of like... little tiny lies he sees, little tiny cracks, and sometimes large cracks in his father's facade. He can, like, you know, start to see something, but then, you know, Rosenfeld comes and puffs up his head with, like, you know, the only thing that's keeping your dad, you know, puffed up and stay. And then he's turning into like a little Marco at the end. I think that's just, like you said, it feels really good. You're not going to, I mean, I don't know what some people are out there thinking that, like, you go to a teenager and you tell them their parent that's filled them with their heads full of lies. You just give them proven factually wrong once, and they're going to be like, oh, shit, yeah, totally. I'm going to turn. That's not how this stuff works. It's like you said, two steps forward, one step back. Slowly recovering from the mental abuse you've been under, and if anything, this is still taking place far, far too quickly. But they are taking their time in a 6-episode season to continue the fine arc they had from season 5.
And that's the good thing, right? They've had 2 seasons now to do this, so it's not, oh shit, we got to rush and do this stuff all in 6 episodes as well as everything else from book 6. It's they've had time to build it, and so it feels more natural. Yeah, I've really liked what they're doing there. And then how did you feel? I guess like my biggest question from the previous episode was, how are they going to handle the Holden-Naomi dynamic after Holden essentially threw away their shot at just killing the head of the Free Navy to preserve her son's life? How did you feel they did with that?
I thought they did fine. I hate it. I think it Holden is full of shit and he shouldn't have done it. And Naomi said all the things that I thought she should say about it. I will say that when we get to that scene, I want to talk about like where I thought that scene was going and then kind of being disappointed that it didn't turn out that way. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm Amos. Yo, Cap, I've been turning this around all week since I've seen the episode. And yeah. I want to see the angle, and I'm not seeing it because the angle is a purely selfish one. I can't, mm-hmm. and it's a human one though, right?
Oh, sure.
I can't be the one that kills your son because I know that you'll never be able to look at me again the same way. Putting Naomi above the safety of the solar system, of all humankind, right?
Uh-huh.
That's pretty shitty, but like, that's the thing that people do, and it wouldn't surprise me because there's also like a little lost in translation. Like, Philip is piecing together what happened from his side, and I think he's drawing different conclusions, and that might turn the fate of the whole fucking war.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is very Lord of the Rings, like, who, you know, like Bilbo and Frodo spared this weird, pale, twisted hobbit dude that ends up kind of sort of saving them all in the end.
Uh-huh.
Two very human acts kind of, or I guess hobbit acts, canceling each other out. So they might be going with that, but like, I just can't as a as kind of what do you like a pragmatist.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't co-sign. Well, yeah, you, yeah, I can, I mean, I can understand what he did, but Jesus, it's yeah. frustrating.
Yeah. No, same here. Like, I get why he did it. And I think if Holden were to try and justify it to Amos, there'd be some long string of like what you said, some butterfly effect of kindness and love and peace that he would try and spin toward like showing love toward a single person is actually what everyone needs to do. And we just need to get, if everyone were on the same page about this, we could make it happen. But like, you're not, you're in a war, right? Like, that ship has kind of sailed in it for this particular situation in this moment. You got to make the tough decisions, and you got to make the sacrifice. And I think, yeah. you know, one of the things that Duarte says to Kara, in the beginning kind of carries through to what Holden's doing. He's not willing to make that sacrifice, giving up, you know, potentially his own relationship with Naomi in order to win this war and take down the enemy. So,
yeah, I think that the thing is I think Holden could have leveled with He could have leveled with Amos, and Amos would understand. But I think at the end, he'd be like, well, don't do that again or I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, I am trying
hasn't
to win this
war. Hasn't
he
already said that to Holden? Hasn't he been like, you're the guy I look to for my moral compass?
I mean, he did say that, but I'm saying like, that's in absence of Holden explaining. Because like, Holden had an explanation. Like, that scene is a little bit dishonest because he had an explanation. The explanation was just purely self-serving and didn't take into consideration literally anyone else's feelings, not even Naomi's.
Yeah.
So you're right, but you're right. Like, Amos all but told him, like, you do this one more time and I don't even know why I'm out here fighting. I might as well just go back to find the most comfortable spot in the system that's going to have the lights on the longest and go to the best brothel and spend all my Rocinante shares on it because fuck this. Being out in the void, getting shot at, kind of shit.
Yeah, I thought he had done that before in the series. Maybe I'm thinking of this moment in the book and remembering that as a previous time that Amos had said, "Hey, I'm you're my moral compass, and if you fuck up, I fuck up. So don't fuck up, or I'm leaving."
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Before we go further, I just want to like catch you on something. I think you called the admiral on Laconia Duarte. Is that? I thought that's the guy who died in the gate last year. This, I think this is a new supreme commander.
It
of Laconia.
Might be. The book is Duarte. He's doing all of this Laconia shit. So,
or maybe I'm forgetting who Alex's old commander was from last season. So it could be my.
I think you're right.
Had no idea what this guy's name was, and I wasn't sure.
I thought
sure.
it said Duarte on his uniform, but maybe not. Maybe not.
Oh, I thought it said. Oh, because I'm looking at my notes, and I thought I wrote a Quarte, like with a Q.
Oh, Duarte so and Quarte. Admiral Quarte. We're taking place of Admiral Duarte.
So you might be right. You might be right. That might have been a false correction. I don't know. I
don't
haven't
know,
read the book,
I could have sworn
so
you were right,
I don't
too.
Know.
So it all gets very fuzzy. Okay. What do you say we get into the episode?
Yeah. Before we do, I just want to say, like, you know, it's like just a few more days left in the so-called holiday season before we move on to New Year's. And if you haven't given our Very Belt of Christmas a shot yet, it should be in the podcast feed you're listening to, or should be on this YouTube channel. You're watching a video and a lot of people have liked it. And I just want to make sure you get a last chance to get some holiday cheer. Not even cheer. It's a holiday full spectrum emotion.
Mm-hmm.
As seen through Christmas in the Belt in the 24th century, Very Belt of Christmas. Check it out. All right, let's take a quick break, then let's get to the episode.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
All right, we're back with the continuing adventures of Kara the Explorer. Special guest star, the Admiral, with a seeming host of crippling psychological issues. Jim, what'd you think of this fucked up funeral scene?
I was just waiting. I was looking at my watch going, man, when does the pet cemetery close? Because I know after, like, once it gets dark, they shut the gates on that shit. So you need to get out there with that body, kid. Because we all knew what was happening, right? I don't think was any question that we had a pet cemetery situation on our hands after last episode. Here, certainly, we get to see the next step. The next episode, we'll get to see whether or not it works, whether or not it fucks him up and turns him into some crazy hybrid thing.
Gives him a permanent dick sucker mouth. You know, sure. Like that seems to be the body plan.
I don't
of these.
Know if you could say that about children, but
I'm not a purple frog. They are the perverts here. They're the ones transforming things into sex dolls. It's like a very unfortunate thing. I don't condone it.
I'll say something taboo.
Purple frogs
about
have their own agenda.
I'll bring a taboo child statement into the mix. I love seeing children doing taboo things like escorting their brother's dead body to the pet cemetery. I think there's something fucked up and unnatural and just wrong about that whole situation. And I love it.
It is like a little bit Stephen King. Like, children fucking around with stuff they shouldn't, and they're going to find out. I did get a little bit of like the Grimes family dynamic from The Walking Dead. Like, who is watching these children? Like, you guys live in a hab that looks like it's 30 feet round. I'd say square, but round. And she's taking like a 6-wheel medical bed out the front door. And the parents are just, you know, you just try. If my child had died in the last 48 to 72 hours, I'd be on high alert for everything. Like, I can't believe.
Yeah.
I can't believe this is Carl running off for dramatic purpose all over again. So I just not a fatal error, but anytime you're straying close to Grimes storytelling and Walking Dead, maybe pull it back a notch.
I mean, she's been that the entire sixth season though, right? Like, I mean, she started this whole thing by being out on her own playing with alien plant and animal life.
Maybe she gasses her parents. Like, she's very resourceful. Yeah. She takes things without permission. She goes to the medical thing. She gets a high grade narcotic and she just, you know, aerosols it. And that's how she gets her unsupervised time.
That's how I would do it.
They do. Listen, before we talked about, because I want to talk about the Admiral a bit. I also admire, all jokes aside, the storytelling in this show has always been tight. Mm-hmm. Like, Kara dashing out in front of the vehicle and almost getting ran over pays off because there's like, I don't know, because I cranked up my sound system, don't have subtitles, but I want to hear what all the walla walla murmur was going on. And they're talking about like, yeah, apparently this kid ran out on a curve of the road and the vehicle flipped over on him. The driver's being held personally responsible, even though it's an accident. There's people saying, you know, like, it's like, well, what do you think's going to happen to the driver? And they're like, well, what do you think? And he's like, well, it's just an accident. And it's like, you think that matters? There's soldiers talking about forming a firing squad. Just in case you haven't gotten the note on Laconia, it's a very martial, hard nose, you know, can't wear a bracelet commemorating your mother's death kind of society. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't chilled out since season 5. I thought that was good.
Changed to Admiral Coarte.
Admiral Coarte.
He's just as hard-nosed as Duarte
was. Yeah. What do you think about the Admiral? Because he seemed like a whole box of crazy.
I liked him. I mean, yeah, he's got his issues, but I feel like he's trying to, you know, give this girl a much needed emotional support moment. So,
but it was also about, I felt like it's as much about getting support for himself as her, like, you know, like her putting his hand, like her hand on his knee and being like,
"Whoa, what if I fail?" You know,
yeah, don't give up, Admiral. We need you to protect us. Like,
yeah. But also, she's not taking his advice. He's like talking about sacrifice. Like, you got to make sacrifice, and she's like, "Nah, I don't want to. Sorry, not going to happen."
And what? So he's clearly talking about Mars as both a place and a concept, and like a sense of nationality.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like sacrificing Mars, especially when he's like, you know, we're not just talking colloquially. I'm talking about him to make sacred, like to burn up as an offering. I'm wondering if, you know, like because Mars, like they got their parliament building exploded, but they've gotten off relatively light compared to Earth. I wonder if there's some new punch is going to come as a reprisal for their maybe hasty attack that they're planning this episode.
Could be. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he was getting at.
I don't either. I don't know why. Yeah, like it may, because like I said, you might be right that they're just trying to sell us on this guy being super hyper vigilant and trying to protect everybody, and you know, has some trauma from all the experience of seeing Mars fall apart. But he read as religious nut job to me.
And yeah, it might be a Naomi thing. Like kind of what Naomi's on about, like killing her Belter friends is a very hard thing to do, right? That might be his sacrifice, like. All the Martians to die or will have to die.
Do you think it ties into Kara, her brother, at all? Like, you know, because he's making some kind of allusion to his sacrifice of Earth, you know, making it mean something to her brother's death and making that mean something.
Maybe. He doesn't seem like as concerned about the death of this child as he is about the larger situation that he's in. So I'm not sure if he's aware enough to do that, but maybe
they also might be telling a story of a burgeoning rebellion, because it's clear to me that Kara's parents don't want to be here. They were sent as an advanced scientific scouting team. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to be back on Earth presenting their research materials, but the gate being interdicted has stopped all of that. So there's a lot of people.
And there's a lot of people that feel like these also, like, let's not forget that this faction betrayed Mars and Earth, every inner, and went off and did its own thing to help the Free Navy. So like,
well, if you look at it correctly, though, Jim, you'll see that the Martians still on Mars are the actual traitors betraying the Martian ideal. And this is the true blue Martian stock that has split off the decayed carcass of their society. Yeah,
that's Quarte would spin it. But what does Paris think? What is Paris going to think when you know, Kara's parents land and say, we're here for our internships? I don't.
Well, Paris won't say shit because they took a 40 kiloton asteroid right up the Eiffel Tower. I'm just making that up. But
yeah,
no, I don't know. They're definitely setting this that like there's been some low grade hostility between like the more research oriented people and the Laconians who have kind of come and taken over.
And it could be that they weren't told that, you know, they were defecting and all this. They were just ordered.
Oh,
on a
I don't think so.
Right?
I think that was very much a surprise when it's like, surprise, we're taking over and the ring gate shutting and maybe not open ever again.
I wonder also, how much news they get there. Do they know about the war going on? Do they know?
They
about
mentioned
all
that Marco
ship?
Has completely shut down communications through the gate. So like Marco might be getting messages, but he is not relaying them to anyone else. So it's been zero communication to any of the settlements throughout the ring system at this point.
Gotcha.
No, it's interesting to see, because I'm also trying to think of like what would a rebellion even look like. I feel like it'd be swiftly and surely put down by the Spartan warriors here. Also, I mentioned that last episode that there was like a ring gate structure surrounding the protomolecule cruiser that they're constructing. I got a better look at it, and now it looks like that's like a helix. There's like a helix of ring gate material that's coiling around the entire assembly.
Wow.
And I wonder what I'm just trying to, I'm looking for function in this form, because it looks like a potato with a ribbon around it at this point. but
is that just like the shipyard docks? Is that like the gantries they use to build this thing or what?
I don't know. What would the proto molecule, because it's all spider webby and organic look like, what's the proto molecule need of the star dock? Yeah.
Or do they grow it? Right.
Yeah. And also like, because that was something I got that I didn't really appreciate on my first watch through of the series. Oh, first few watch throughs. Is the Arbogast. The proto molecule was kind of like thrashing around looking for something to do until it dismantled the Arbogast. And then a few episodes later launched a vehicle very much in the Arbogast. Like it's a big saucer's kind of like, I think it literally learned how to make a starship from them feeding it the Arbogast. And I wonder, like, it makes me wonder what they put in as an input for these proto molecule kind of hybrid ships and what they put in as the, or maybe this is just a custom creation from Cortazar. Let's talk about his thing. He comes running in screaming at the end here. What's he going on about, Jim?
I'm not sure exactly, but as far as what he says, something about coordination protocol returning a coherent reply pattern.
See, this to me is bad news because they have hinted for the last two seasons that there is a larger threat that killed off the proto molecule makers, and they're all dead for like a billion years. So any response we're getting at this point, probably not from them. Probably if I'm guessing, we only got, you know, a few episodes left, probably from the red fire demon gate things. Yeah. Like bad news. Sounds like it's bad news.
Anything that Cortazar is doing is probably bad news. I don't see him as definition. Like a benevolent entity. Yeah. No, he's probably fucking something up.
Yeah. Anybody 3D printing an alien battlecruiser, probably you can't trust. Sure. All right. I think that takes care of our Laconian business. Let's move back to our system on Ceres Station, where the station manager that Marco abandoned is whipping her people into an anti-inner frenzy. And let me tell you, the inners, not fans of this rhetoric, Jim.
No, I mean, they probably shouldn't be. We find out what the stuff that was vented last time was. It was water. It was water. We were wondering, like, what was up with that? Okay, it's water. So does that, I assume that reduces the 3 weeks of time that they have to get support to the Ceres Station. All these people are dead, right? If all their water tanks are vented, they're dead. They're dead.
I don't know if it's all, but yeah.
Yeah, and it might not be all of them.
And I'm like, at what point does she turn on Marco? Because like the people are all like pissed off at the inners now, but like they got eyes. They saw the sequence of events. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they don't believe what the inners are saying as far as their intelligence and their tracking down of Belter munition resource and serial numbers and stuff like that. But like, there's no food, no water. And you got administrator saying, we'll be fine. If these people leave, they leave. There's still no food or water. Like, is this turned into a death call? The station manager, I'm not sure. I don't know. She's trying to maintain control and calm because if she loses that, then the death toll rises. But it feels like the death toll is going to be close to 100% anyway. I'm not sure what her game is.
At this point, yeah. No, I'm with you. I don't know exactly what the point of calming people is, but maybe it's just something to do. It's the only thing she can do. So
she's also building rapport with the, like, you know, she's not turning on. She's still maintaining her cred as a true Belter. And maybe that's going to give her a position to pivot towards accepting help from the belt or from the inners because, you know, kind of like an only Nixon can go to China moment.
Sure. Like a Fred Johnson bridge there.
Yeah. She's trying to be cool in both of the inner and the belter's eyes. I don't know. It's wild. But I do like how this show's again building, like, you know, when the administrator said, or when Avasaral is pondering about leaking the information they have about the Belter explosive, she's like, it's just going to be one more lie and along. And the show, to its credit, has shown us those lies. Like Anderson Station was a bullshit operation to just cow a bunch of Belters and killed a bunch of men, women and children, innocent and unarmed. You know,
Eros.
Like Eros. I mean, that wasn't like
official inners, but it was inners. Come on.
But it was inners. It was inners fucking with them, using them as animals. And they probably still haven't got the full truth about that. there's, and like, you know, the Mars and Earth pointing fingers at each other over the Kant and over, like, mm-hmm. there's just all this mutual distrust, and it got at something real that, like, you know, lying is such a top tier strategy in dealing with any group of people, right up until they stop believing you, and then it becomes the worst because you can't tell them anything anymore. And this just goes to show, it's like, maybe some hard truths and some sharing and caring 100 years ago, we wouldn't be in this situation. But, you know, like Holden says, you're always trying to murder your way out. You're trying to kill your way towards a better future, and a lot of expediency. So I just like that. It felt real. It felt like a politician being like, shit, we can't do this because it's stupid. It won't work. We got to think of something else.
The other details we get in this scene, that explosion took out the two new Martian frigates, which I think were what is the class?
They weren't Doniger, because those wouldn't be called a frigate.
Yeah, those weren't frigates. I don't know. It took out a couple other ships too, and they were already weak.
I think Marco's got a Doniger class, or is he using it? Because I thought they always referred to it as a heavy frigate. So,
I want to say the Doniger class was the one that disintegrated with Duarte. If in fact he disintegrated, I'm not sure. He would have had like their flagship, and those are the big ships that Mars has, right?
Yeah. I think Donagers. It's the biggest class that they particular have. But so the idea is, like, you know, these two probably could have equaled Marco's flagship, and they just lost it in this, you know, Belter terrorist attack.
Yeah, so, and they're making a point about how they don't have the military required to get out there and take back, like, Medina Station, for instance.
And military is also a terrible way to distribute humanitarian relief. They're not, you know, they're not great at keeping a peace or things of that nature.
Which, I mean, knowing that they're already kind of, like, stretched thin with everything they have to do, it makes it extra insane when the MCRN admirals are considering going this alone with an attack on Medina Station. It's like the combined fleet, the joint fleet here, doesn't have what it needs. You think you're going to do it with Mars is weaker than Earth's fleet at this point, right? Because Duarte stole half the shit. So,
and they were decommissioning a bunch too. Right. Like, it's
seems insane. Not just foolhardy, but like the people pondering this idea are just totally out of their mind to me.
Yeah. But I don't know if you think that sitting here and playing, you know, humanitarian relief aid to the Belters, why Marco entrenches a position that they already spent a lot of time last season convincing us is like, man, once you get in there, you've got a real stranglehold on the ring gate. It might make a certain kind of sense, because if not now, when? We get weaker every day. We do have a stealth ship advantage. We can get an element of surprise. We can't. I think it's stupid too. And this captain I admired so much, I don't like her as a Warhawk, but I don't know. I'm curious to see befalls the Martian, because like I said, I think it's an easy prediction to make that you're going to see a bunch of badass Martian ships going out to the ring. Stealth ships are going to take out a couple of the sentries and stuff, and then right as they're winning, then you're going to have these protomolecule cruisers coming out and fucking slice them up. But yeah, I'm curious to see what the protomolecule comes up with in terms of an actual weapon of war, because what we've seen so far from their protomolecule is essentially the equivalent of like a nano machine bulldozer making an interstate highway. These weren't intentionally lethal machines, you know, these were just civic works, like a bridge. It's like a bridge coming to life and attacking you, you know. So like, what is a warship going to look like?
True. I don't know. Their weapons could be far beyond our capacity to imagine. But who knows?
Moving on to Monica doing a sympathy piece regarding some slain UN troopers when she runs into some access problems.
Yeah, my big question coming out of the scene is, why would Belters care? I don't know. The Belters, you know, run the gamut, right? They're on. There's a spectrum of Belters out there as far as how sympathetic they are to humanity as a whole, and how factionalized they are. maybe some of them will care. Maybe that's what they're trying to do here with showing Earthers stories who are killed in this thing.
Killed by Belters trying to help Belters. I think that, like, it's a percentage game. Like, anytime you humanize someone, I think about, like, going back into my experience with the Cold War, like, you know, how, like, American got hyped on, like, things like our hockey team beating the Russian hockey team.
Sure.
And how, like, what a high we got on nationally when that happened. And I'm like, I don't remember, but I guarantee that NBC, whoever had the Olympics at the time in 1980, was not doing puff pieces on the Russian players. And, like, you know, look at Sergei. He grew up a poor farmer from the Ukraine, and all he wanted to do is play hockey, and his grandpa taught him on the frozen lake. And he's like, it'd probably be harder to just be like, you know what? Fuck those Russians. Yeah. If they did that kind of, like, and that, you know, it's just, it's a small thing like that. Like, humanizing people. These aren't faceless. These are people who had hopes and dreams just like you. Maybe a little tone deaf talking about them swimming in a sea. Pleasure and sport. Like, maybe not play up.
We have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We just fucking, yeah, it's all, you can't drink it. We just fucking swim in it. Fuck right. it. You know? I think that it's sound, you know, like, making them appear weak, because that's the first thing, you know, we are not a killing machine. We can be killed, and we can be killed even when we're trying to help. And I would be surprised if it doesn't work to some extent, especially since this is a show that seems to be wanting to push that perspective. So, the Rossi is continuing now that it finished its little skirmish last episode on its way to rejoin the fleet at Ceres. The crew is licking their wounds from the battle damage that they incurred in the last episode. When Peaches noticed something odd in the dead torpedo's flight telemetry.
Oh, this is a scene I have no real notes for, because it's just a setup for other scenes.
Okay. It's essentially showing that Naomi's still kind of, like, think working on the ring gate problem.
Oh, that's part of it. Okay. Yeah.
She's got high resolution date. Like Holden's going through, and the whole ship is like, God damn, we missed Appella. We're not, you know, like, he's feeling the tension of his decision and the fact that the crew's kind of, not even Naomi's on board with it.
And the fact that she's sifting through data about the battle they just fought, in which he did a thing that he doesn't want anybody to know about. And I mean, there's a lot of tension here about, like, are they going to find out what I did? Which, by the end of the episode, obviously, that's all cards right on the table. But it works in the moment, for sure.
I also like Amos and Bobby talking about, you know, in the cargo bay, kind of how pissed they are about. And, you know, Bobby's pissed off at her armor, and Amos is pissed off at his PDC cannon. And he's like, you're still pissed off about Tapella? And Amos, his when she asked him about it, I thought was really good. And then, you know, they spend a minute listening to one of Alex's old country western hits. Like, if you remember, I think it's a season 3, one early episodes where he was kind of alone in the Rossi while they were down on Ganymede, kind of losing his mind. This is the song when he was, like, I don't know, spraying Red Bull in the cabin and slurping it down and doing this. This is what was playing. And I like it.
I do too. Yeah, it's a great story about, like, that's all he played when they were on the Razorback, and, like, claim that there was no other music. It's that's really good. It's a little character moment for a dead character.
And then singing the song together, just taking the time to do it. It's because, again, Alex died hero. It's a damn shame about what the other guy did. But I liked it, the way that the show is finding a way to help us all kind of, like, get peace with that and give him some of these kind of nice character moments with him being dead and off screen.
Yeah.
So, and again, 6 episodes, you could cut a lot of this shit, and they're not doing it. And I like that.
The other thing that I like is when Claire finds out this information, she's like, oh, I look what I discovered here. She's like, this is way above my pay grade. She wants nothing to do with this. Like, the situation, the tenuous situation she's in, like, being almost a full crew member here, like, she does not want to confront Captain Holden with the fact that she knows what he did. It would just, that one, like, she doesn't think it would go well for her.
Well, it's that, but there's also an element that she goes into more detail further in the episode, where, because she's like, it's this way above my pay grade, and also I'm not judging, and I'm not I don't think she's that's as the tactic. I think that she's really had some come to Jesus moments about violence and death and choosing that over life. And I think that all ties again. It's very economical because this thing's fucking burning at 15 G's, but they are not really skimping on the character moments. They're just like incidental, and you have to catch them in passing, kind of like catching up to Marco's spin depot. Speaking of Marco, he's on deck of the Pella, just raging, still smarting over his humiliating defeat. He's issuing orders for executions for senior crew members of the other ships, and Philip begins his new job after being demoted from the bridge as junior repair technician.
Yeah, Marco's on full tilt here. Like he's rattled. He's rattled by Holden. Holden gave him that look through the camera, and Marco's just like, God, I don't know if I can beat this guy now.
Yeah. Really's got him mentally dominated. And Marco is so fragile and so kind of fraught and rudderless that he doesn't even realize the viewpoint that he's letting the crew get themselves exposed to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Rosenfeld brings it up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she doesn't bring it up to him. She brings it up to the Philip. Because Philip goes to get his new orders from this guy. I thought that was great that this guy's kind of like, you know, where the fuck you been? He realizes it's Philip Inaros and suddenly goes into like, you know, toady mode. And Philip's like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. You're going to have to be the boss of me. And like, what kind of like a weird situation that must be for this guy. But yeah, Renfield puts all this on this little, I can't remember if he's supposed to be 16 or 18, but putting a lot on this kid's shoulder. Like, hey, you're responsible for your grown ass father's emotional stability, and if he's not stable, we all gonna die, so see to that, kid.
Philip's not very good at that either. I don't know.
Well, his father doesn't take him serious, and I think that's one of the problems, but also it's just
that's like part of the support, right? Like there's an element of like because Marco, I don't know. Marco likes kind of not taking Philip seriously, likes being, you know, the one in charge here, that power dynamic, that like competency dynamic. He kind of gets off on that. So that is part of like what Philip does to support him, is just be there to get shit on sometimes.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, that's a rough position for Philip to be in for sure.
And this Renfair lady, she's, you know, kind of gives the opposite equal thing that Marco does, where instead of like building him up and then tearing him down and building him up, she like waits for him to like try to flex his ego on her. Like, you know, why should I listen to you? I get to shoot you in the face. What do you think my father do? And she just echoes back what he did when he did,
when he shot his friend in the face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you're just going to keep, you know, and just really blowing him up on his bullshit. It's interesting. It's interesting, this 1-2, you know, daddy stepmommy kind of dynamic that they got here going.
And the third kind of aspect of that is the guy who is his boss now, but realizes, hey, this is the leader of the Free Navy's kid, and I can't really order him around, but I need to order him around. There's a weird mix there too, which I liked.
Yeah. But whatever you think about this this blonde lady with the fierce neck tattoo, she is damn good at shutting down Inaros bullshit all day, every day.
Yeah.
She's just shutting it down like a PDC cannon for their bullshit. Out on the hull of the Rocinante, Amos is forced to confront Holden about him pulling their punches while they repair a PDC.
I like this scene a lot. Mostly because it ends the way it does. I think that's a great line from Amos, where he says, are you pissed at me for asking, or are you pissed because you don't have an explanation to give? And it ends right there, because it has to, right? Like, what is the next step here? Amos is going to attack him. He's going to like kick him into space.
They're over that. Yeah.
That's not their relationship, but like, there's a tension there, right? There's like a course correction that Amos sort of puts Holden back on, because he forces Holden to confront the fact that he did this purely for personal reasons. And this was, in fact, a mistake.
And I don't know if it's intentional, but like the way Amos brought this up, I thought was a masterclass in having a difficult conversation, because
always have a torch in your hand. Yes, I agree. Whenever you're going into a potential confrontation, always have a torch. Yep.
Yeah, you have a certain moral authority over someone when you have right. an industrial weapon that you can wield against them. But him saying like, do you want me to lock you out of fire control? It's not an accusation.
Uh-huh.
It's not a fishing expedition. It's a statement of like, I know what you did. It was bad. And here's something we could do to fix it. And we don't have to talk about it. Just I'll lock you out of fire control. You can still be the captain. And then you won't be tempted to do this bullshit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is completely caught Holden with no room to maneuver, because all of his like defensive bullshit in the face of Amos just stating, like, hey, I'm not making accusations. I'm not casting judgment. I'm just telling you how I feel about the situation and what it makes out me. And yeah, and it led up to, like you said, Amos having the, are you mad because I'm asking, or are you mad because you don't even know? Or you're embarrassed to tell us. Yeah.
It's such an Amos way to approach this, right? It's matter of fact. It's devoid of most of the emotion. Yeah. It feels right for that character.
Meanwhile, back on the Pella, or I guess outside the Pella, Philip is getting a lesson on hull repair from this. I didn't catch this guy's name. This fucking new guy, the FNG, I'm going to call him.
Yeah.
Maybe learns a thing or two about the types of belters that live on places like Ceres Station. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned previously, it seems to contradict a whole lot of what his father said about them being greedy and weak.
Yeah, I think he's bonding with real belters. He's understanding, you know, what makes them tick, and not just getting I talked about, you know, Marco's no true belter stuff last episode. Right. And I feel like that is what he's been feeding to Philip for his entire life. And so now getting to like sit down with them and really talk to them, he's seeing that they're not actually anything like what his father says, or at least not all of them are.
Yeah.
The other thing I really like about this scene is Philip taking pleasure in repairing something instead of destroying something. And that is, I think emotionally, that is where they're trying to take Philip.
Yeah. And it also is, you know, the pine cone didn't fall far from the tree. Like, you know, Naomi had an intuitive aptitude and grasp of engineering and starship repair and things like that. And it seems like that Philip, you know, we saw him, you know, I think he was field stripping some piece of equipment when we first got our first substantive introduction to him. There's been signs that he is kind of Naomi's kid after all. Like Marco's had a really far head start, but he just can't quite outrun that the spark that he got from his mother. And I think number one, that's bullshit. I don't think you get genetic goodness from somebody. But it's a fiction and it's working on that kind of metaphoric level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I also think you're right, 100% right on about this no true belter. Like, the belter has a distinct culture, and it's a culture of, like, you know, taking care of one another, making sure everyone is, you know, being looked after, inclusiveness. And Marco's shit sounds good because you can start paring away. Well, we don't care about this station because they're a bunch of well wallow. Oh, we don't care about this station because, you know, they're too afraid to lift their hand against inners. But, what, you know, and you start, like, I think you even said last episode that, like, what Marco thinks of a belter is the people that are on the Pella, and maybe just Marco and Philip, and maybe push comes to shove,
just Marco, yeah,
just fucking Marco. And I think this is Philip realizing that, like, holy shit, not even on the Pella amongst our gallant crew, you know, like, I can find the defeater for my dad's argument just here in this rando guy. And the other thing is, like, so what if his brother was big and strong and gone on through the belt? This guy would have been dead or on a prison barge.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's always costs to these things. If you go to choose to make war, what are you, you know, choosing not to do? This goes back to Eisenhower's famous Iron Cross speech he gave on his farewell address, to, like, you know, like, every bomber we build is a high school that didn't get built. Every battalion of tanks is 100 miles of interstate highway that doesn't connect our cities. Like, he just listed off, like, the cost of, and it's like, you know, if we don't watch, it's like the total sum of these expenditures is essentially an iron cross that all of humanity hangs from. And Philip is kind of like learning that, like, these, yeah, what are we sacrificing for focusing on these other things? And it's great.
Yeah.
I thought these are great. These are great scenes. They're economical and they're building on everything we know about the setting and these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on back to Rocinante, Holden has to come clean to Naomi about why he spared Marco and the Pella. And she's not happy about the position it's putting herself in.
I had a good time with Naomi catching this coffee. I feel like this shows just how comfortable she is on ships, right? Like they do a lot of visual stuff with Belters, but this to me strikes as like totally Belter. She knows exactly, she can almost tell by the rumble of the engine how much acceleration they're going to put on and then how fast that cup's going to fall and where she needs to grab. She doesn't even look at it. It's, I don't know, little stuff like that is really cool to me in this world.
It reminds me of, I saw this video of a cook cooking in like a container ship that was going through like 60-foot waves.
Oh yeah, Under Siege, I saw that too.
Yeah, the documentary, yeah. Uh-huh. But this guy was just like, in like when you see it, you know, just shot from the camera's perspective, it looks like this guy just lurching from station to station. Then they showed, they went back and rewound the scene and image stabilized it. Uh-huh. So you see like just what his body is doing to stay like upright and like just how instinctive it is. Like, yeah, you know, he's just kind of rolling. And this is Naomi, like in one smooth motion, as soon as gravity comes on, she's just ready to grab that coffee bulb out of the sky. It's great. It's a seamless effect.
It is. Yeah, I loved it. And then the scene, you know, gets, I think, better from there. I think better. It's a confrontation that needed to happen. And we were all kind of wondering last episode, what could possibly be a reasonable excuse from Holden to Naomi about this? Because Naomi doesn't want Holden to protect her, let alone need it. I feel like everybody came out of this like making their case, and I didn't feel like anybody was necessarily in the wrong. They just all had their own reasons for doing the things they did. I don't agree with all of them. I don't agree with Holden disabling this warhead at all, but he had his reason, and I think it is a valid one to him.
So and it's right. I think he's one. I think that him killing Marco,
or God, that's the end of their relationship. It kills that relationship too.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe not right away.
No, sure.
But like, yeah, you'd have to be a very strong person to, you know, like they talk about, that's one of the things that kills relationships, the death of a child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if your mate is the one who killed the child, then like it's even more. So like, I think, but
yeah, like in Breaking Bad, the counselor, right? That dude ended up like backing over his child. Or
yeah,
something
yeah.
And their relationship died. Yeah. So
sure. So like, I think he's right. It's just like, So here's the thing. I actually really like this scene, and I was getting excited because I'm like, holy shit, what should happen here is Holden should give command to Naomi. And I'm like, I thought, because like, you know, they've always made a case that she's a pretty good second officer, and, you know, maybe she was a little bit more sentimental about Belters, and maybe she was a bit like, at this point, she was ready to see her son die. I kind of thought that like what he'd be do is like, you know what, I'll be your XO. Which would return to the theme of like him, you know, like his proper place and him not wanting to be the leader from the, and like turning full circle. Naomi's ready for command, and she, like, it's the perfect way. It's like, well, if Philip dies, it'll be under your hand. Yeah, I was support, but I was your support and steady rock. I wasn't the aggressor. I thought it was the perfect way, and I was getting really excited, and then it didn't happen. I was like, oh, well, fuck. Because now it's just, well, Holden's selfish and wrong, and Naomi is strong and right. But they're still going to have the weak, you know, like Marco, say what you will, he has eliminated the weak links or the perceived weak links in his rank. I just don't know, because like Holden, what's he just going to do the thing next time? Because I don't think any of the math changed.
That's what he promises in the book. I don't know. I won't say anything about how it turns out, but like. Yeah, and he doesn't promise it here, right? Like, he doesn't make any promises. He's not like, oh, next time I'll do it, or next time I'll give you fire control or something. It's just kind of like, I did this thing. Here's why I did it. I don't like that you did that thing. Yeah, I don't need you to protect me, all that stuff. And then they leave it there. So I didn't feel like anything got resolved in this scene, other than all the cards are now on the table. they understand how each other feels about it.
I agree 100%. I thought that's why it felt a little unsatisfying to me, is I thought it was building to something that would, you know, synthesize all the information. Now that all the cards are on the table, what is the best hand? And instead, it's just like, well, we'll just play him the same way next time, and hopefully Holden will call instead of fold, I guess. Yeah.
No, you needed Amos to walk in at the end of that scene and be like, so we're taking you off fire control, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know, because again, I think Holden's right. Like, I don't see how Naomi overlooks or forgives this, and he's not ready. You know, it's such a contrast between the certainty, almost the psychopathic or pathological certainty of the Martian Admiral Quarte, and Holden, ready to sacrifice entire worlds to see his will done, and Holden, who can't even sacrifice a relationship with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised if this Mercy overcoming his wrath ends up being a big plot point later on the season. Back on the Pella, Philip's new repair mentor pulls an explosive prank on him while they continue repairing the stricken vessel.
Yeah, and they see that it was disarmed, right? And there's more information about this later in another quick scene. But yeah, it was disarmed. They think it's a fail safe, but you know, I wonder what Marco will think of this. Is Marco even going to give a shit enough to start to process the fact that Holden spared him?
I don't think this information gets to Marco. I think Marco stops with like Marco Anaros is blessed. I don't need to. That's you come to the right. It's Philip that continues to work through what this means.
Oh, for sure.
In his mind.
So. He's going to deal with that, and we get to a scene here in a second of it, but yeah.
I wasn't sure, like, what the joke was. Like, did this guy know? Like, did he see the warhead disarmed LED and was just fucking with Philip? Because, like, Philip was thinking that this might go off, you know?
Yeah, he knew.
Like, yeah, you got a live fish, dude. It's a nuke.
Yeah, this is in Jurassic Park where Grant is climbing the electric fence, or he goes up to it and he's like, yeah, blah, 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 and the kids are like, ah.
All right, we got a big scene to get to, but let's take a quick break before we get to it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hear the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
All right, we rejoin the action as Drummer and Walker are floating in deep space, preparing to lead a joint assault strike on one of Marco's supply depots. Before they meet stiffer resistance than they expected, the raid proves costly, with one crew member dead and Drummer's right-hand man, Joseph, losing his, he loses his right arm. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that thing's done.
An arm and a life is the cost of this operation.
What's the harder slam moment in this scene? Is it when the crate slams down on his arm for the second time?
Yeah.
Or is it when they grapple onto the spinning, the revolving station and smash onto the surface?
That looked painful.
It looked lethal is what it looked to me. They made them go too hard on this. The station was spinning too fast.
I think
they were too far away. They're too much. Yeah,
you know what? Let's talk about this, because like one thing about the screeners is like, you know, we're watching these things in isolation. I can't just like go to a thread to see, you know, like if there's an astrophysicist opining about the velocities and stuff. How do you dock with this supply depot is two massive balls of cargo containing ships attached with must be an immensely strong tether and then spinning. Mm-hmm. And I think I've read somewhere that you want to spin stabilize almost everything in space because you get like gyroscopic stabilization along at least one axis for free when you do that. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to station keep when you just have to worry about two dimensional position keeping rather than three dimensional. So like, I understand why he takes the time to spin it up. Plus also, if you're going to have crew people standing there, it's always better to have gravity than not, because we're supposed, you know, our biology is dependent on it.
Mm-hmm.
But damn, how do you dock with this fucking thing? Like, I'm trying to think of like how you get into a straight line acceleration on the inside of it to where you can dock and take advantage. Like it seems insane. Like do you think the station slows down and goes kind of on the float and then they dock and then it speeds back up? Because I don't see how anything docks with this. It seems insane.
Yeah, normally when you see something spinning, you'll have a central point of like docking, right? Like you can go to the center of this thing. Yes, it'll be spinning, but you can spin your ship at the same rate and dock with it. This you can't, because you'll be changing direction.
Or there's things like Tycho that have those giant arms that kind of look violent, like snatch the ships out, like you kind of roughly match speed and then it's automatic arms just come and snatch you. I when I saw how hard they hit, I'm like, damn, how's this supposed to work? Because obviously they're attacking it when it's maybe it's another reason to spin it up. It makes it harder to assault that way.
But, you could slow it. You could slow it for sure.
I think so. And if you're going to visit, you could probably fill it, you know, its tanks back up with more spin juice if it needs. So
I'll tell you, the way to not dock with it is to fire a grapple at it and then slam onto its surface at.
Yeah,
100
I would
miles
try
an hour?
To match its straight line speed. And and the thing is, like, I think like if you had a grappling system, maybe you could cushion a blow a little bit with that, too. You know, to where. It spools out more at big, you know, instead of just like, I'm hard tethered crunk. I don't know. Seems like you'd take injuries, if nothing else.
For sure. And then the next line is just like them totally normal talking through their helmets, their helmet mics. So they've not had any problem smashing down. But the second smash was brutal as well. That crate coming down on his arm again. I laughed out loud because of how, I don't know, hardcore this was.
Yeah, it's and I'm like, once they got the thing off And like she got the, I'm like, why don't you just pull him out, man? But I guess like he was still smashed a little bit further back.
Maybe.
I don't know. But yeah, like some brutal field amputations.
Probably the most brutal thing we've seen since season one, when the medic, was it, got his head shot off.
Well, the belter who shot the gate the first time, I think that's the goriest thing I've ever seen on this show.
Him just getting it's hard pulped. To actually see, but yes, you're right.
What's funny is like me and Jack watched that when we were watching through. We watched it back and I was rewinding and like trying to, and like I happened to pause at a moment where his face and eyeballs were detaching, and they modeled a surprising amount of this young man disintegrating, if you want to frame by frame it in 4K. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff here because, you know, as Marco's Depot, you might have all the time in the world, but they engineered a situation where there's people on board. Like, why are there people on board? They realize, mm-hmm. they see that they're working on a manifest or getting ready for a pickup. That means there is an unknown, you know, you can't just fuck around all the time out here. So it gives it a little bit of urgency. And then it turns out, you know, there's people there and they're booby trapping things. I like it. And I like, you know, I'm a big Master and Commander fan. I like a good field amputation scene. Man, that arm, that grizzled stump.
I'm telling you.
I don't know where they sawed like a Cornish hen in half and shoved it down this guy's sleeve or what, but it was authentically biologically gory. Really gross. You know, the other thing I realized in the scene is because they've like Michio has been kind of like the butt of everything this season. Like she's the one that fucks up under pressure. She's the one that can't hit the button right. She's the one. But she gets this nice moment where like as a medic, she knows exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. And everybody else is doing the wrong thing and like losing their mind and like being squeamish. And she's the one that is in charge and doing and saving lives. And just kind of goes to show like, yeah, maybe her forte is not like death and destruction and combat, but mm-hmm. look at her in a life-saving role. Like it's interesting. And then they don't make a big deal out of it. It's just there to notice. Like she does have a core competency and it's very strong. It's just not in the death dealing department.
Yeah, no, they're really leaning into the, you know, reaching for violence stuff that they're talking about with Holden a few seasons ago and bring back up in this episode. It's kind of all over this episode.
Back on board the Rocinante, Bobby just cannot believe their run of luck, the millions of one odds that went against them in that last battle. And Peaches stays behind in the galley to level with Holden about her thoughts on taking versus sparing life that she's accumulated in these last few seasons.
So what do you think about the idea that he shouldn't tell Bobby anything? The rest of the crew knows he's not going to tell Bobby.
I think in general, people that you care about, you should be 100% honest. But this is also a military situation where like this one of the very few situations like crises and things like that, where like, you know, you have immediate life and death at hand. Are some of the few things where you can with a straight face say like, hey, we can't be open and honest with the public. We have to keep secret some things. We have to like, I don't know, because Bobby is dealing with her own shit and I don't know what she thinks about this.
Yeah, she's Bobby has a rage boner here for like killing belters at the moment. And I feel like she might just break Holden in half if he tells her what he did.
Yeah, she might bone tomahawk him.
I
don't know. I don't, because that's what my thought is. Like, yeah, I don't like it, but like also, it'd be touch and go with her.
For sure. And they don't have like the relationship that, you know, her and Alex had.
She's not in the crew, right?
She's in the crew with some of the crew, but like Amos, for instance, right? Those two are getting along swimmingly, but like. Holden doesn't really talk to Bobby much, at least lately.
Yeah, I don't know. I wondered that myself, like what kind of repercussions that will have if this gets out to Bobby, or because, yeah, she's clearly the one that's most pissed. You know, she's always been the most gung ho. You know, she is the one that's like, fuck it, we tried space them. And she just clearly can't, like, you know, like, all it must be uniquely frustrating because she's so well trained. She's got such a handle on the technology. Yeah. She's got such a great military mind. And like every single time she goes into official action, it's a clusterfuck. Like she's fed to a protomolecule beast for a commercial, essentially, or her whole squad. Uh-huh. She goes against billion to one odds to not kill Marco. It must be really frustrating. Especially when you pull off
suit
like
malfunction, shit like that. Yeah.
Especially with all the crazy shit they did do, all the 180 no scopes, all with the railgun, like everything. Yeah. And then the one thing, like she said, I was like, what was it? A billion to one odds? It's I don't know. I don't think there's enough time left to start a big rift between Bobby and the other factions of the ship. So
That's the only like saving grace here is I don't think they have the time because
It might be
one of those situations like where you fucker, you everybody knows here except for me, huh? When were you going to tell me?
Yeah, it might be narrative economy because like they know that like if you told her, you would have to give a scene where she would go and like, can you believe like we just don't have time for 5 minutes of Bobby coming to grips and like, is it so like, you know what? Just keep her in the dark. There's only 2 more hours to get through. She just won't find out.
Yeah, we tore down the gym set. We can't have her go back there in the last 2 episodes. So.
Right, she can't pump iron.
Yeah, we repurposed that for the reactor or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think about the Peaches and his...
Oh, my God. This is... There's this look. When Claire's like, you want to know the time, like the exact moment that I realized I didn't want to kill you? And there is this look from Holden... that says, okay, it's going to be one of those days. It's going to be one of those conversation kind of days, huh? Mm-hmm. It's so good. It's so good. I love, absolutely love what he does in this scene.
What I love about it, and again, I don't know if you get this unless you've just watched the whole series over, but as soon as she opened her mouth and said, do you want to know the moment? I knew, because they do this beautifully in season 3, completely non-verbally, showing the scene of Holden and Naomi talking and her realizing what a good guy James Holden is and making that snap decision on the bridge to like alter the calculus. Like,
yeah,
this is never explicitly told, but like, I think it says something that I knew immediately what she was going for just by watching the show and watching everyone's performances and how it's directed. So like, kudos to they really are doing a great job in this, you know, fast but nostalgic season of making those callbacks, and we get it because the show's so good.
Yeah, totally. I also really like the line, especially coming from Claire, to where she says to Holden, don't ever feel bad about not killing someone. You know, with everything she's been through and how her life was so fucked up by wanting to kill someone and then realizing she couldn't kill that person. And like everything good that's come from her not killing Holden, right? I mean, he's done a lot of good stuff here after the fact. So I don't know. I really like that line, and I think it's kind of what Holden needs to hear at this point.
Yeah, someone who because his thing is like, you know, I guess I didn't make the case, but he did make the case. This one person changed her whole affect and has now become a valuable ally, and did her part to save the whole solar system based on
his
passion and his willingness to self-sacrifice. Yeah. So, you know, you did make a difference.
Yeah, you changed the hearts and minds of people by not reaching for violence. It's exactly what you were trying to do.
And it makes you wonder what the effect of the last punch that he's pulled is going to have, even though it's a horseshit decision that you should never make in a rational world.
Right.
You know, sometimes it's the things you like, it goes back to the captain that I like so much of the Martian fleet, her not doing the thing that she should have done as a good soldier, saved the system there. It's like time and time again. Mm-hmm. We've had that in real life. Like, I don't know how many like instances I've read of like, you know, the Soviets getting an alert that we launched missiles at them and the person just being like, what the fuck? It's the middle of the night. We haven't been beefing. Like, no, I'm not pushing a button. Get the fuck out of here. Like people like stopping and choosing to do something other than killing people like time and time again, alters the course of history. And I think we're going to see the course of fake history being altered here.
Yeah, they've really been leaning into that, right? I mean, the Prax thing, too, where they're talking about, like, it takes good people. That's what it always takes. Bobby says that, right? It's the person doing the thing that they probably shouldn't do in the situation, but is morally the right thing to do.
Can we talk about Peach's sodium intake? I feel like she's a prime candidate to have one of those still shots of her face with blood trickling out of her nose. You know, she's prime candidate for being Alex.
Oh no! Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Do you think someone that takes a half a cup of salt with their belt or kibble is going to take a 14G burn? Fuck no.
Yeah, actually, I never thought about it that way. You would want the lowest blood pressure possible if you're like a soldier, right?
I would think. I mean, you don't want to go for zero.
No, go for zero. Go for zero because you can't get there. It's unattainable. And if you do get too low, they can just put you under acceleration, right? Like, let's just keep a ship. Let's put you in that spin station, spin a little bit faster. You're good.
I want to see what the UN Surgeon General says about it, because I don't know if those facts check out. But this is an enormous amount of salt. I don't know.
Is a callback to last episode where Bobby was having trouble even gagging this shit down, right?
Like, oh, it's another, like, this food's so terrible that, like,
likes it that way because it's the only way it's edible. Yeah.
That's, speaking of the old Age of Sail Royal Marine Day, like, you always come across the idea that, like, old sailors were drunk all the time because they mixed alcohol with their water and lime juice, so they didn't get scurvy, and they also it would sterilize the shit that was growing in the water.
Sure.
And two, everything they ate was salty as fuck to keep it preserved over long transatlantic and Pacific. So, like, it's kind of interesting that, like, we're going back. Like, if they start serving grog rations and eating hardtack, then we're just doing Age of Sail shit in space.
Yeah.
Back on board, or I guess this is the Sirius station on Avasarala's flagship, Monica previews her latest sympathy segment, this time centering a narrative around a fat, lazy cat named Lucky Earther, which, if 20th century Belter politics are anything like 21st century Twitter politics, cat posting might very well turn the tide of public opinion. We'll do it for each other, but for a cute cat, fuck yes, we will.
Sure. Also, much like him, I'm just tired of all the hate. That feels so relevant right now. Like, Jesus, come on. Come on. Yeah.
Are we all on
this station of Earth together or not?
We're not there yet. We're not done with the hate. We're not nearly done. That's the real problem. People are born fresh with their hate fate gauges completely unfilled every day. So sure. Even if you could get everybody on, like, there's going to be more assholes born ready to beat those hate boners. So it's one of those things. It's like, you know, like, this is a pretty trite point that, like, anytime in any conflict, if you pause for a moment, you ask people on the sides, like, Jesus, are you tired of the death? You tired? Almost everyone's like, yes, of course. Oh, my God, this is terrible. But, like, ask the question of, like, what you're willing to sacrifice, what point in negotiation are you willing to concede to in, and then it's a much harder question.
Sure.
But if you can get the sides, the especially when you're trying to unite them against a greater threat, I think you got a much greater shot. And if you can get these Belters to understand Marco is a traitor and a coward, and if there's only some strong spokesperson in the Belt that can, like, call him out on that shit and humiliate him publicly and crack his facade of invincibility, maybe a Belter that defies him, maybe you would have something here. But we'll get to that. What did you think of Monica's point about weakness, that you gotta let yourself be weak to humanize yourself and to humanize your opponent?
I took this more as when she says, like, somebody needs to hear that, she's saying Avasarala needs to hear it.
Well, it goes both ways.
Yeah, because she's just denying some of the obvious facts as well. But I don't know.
Because that's the thing they've also told, is, like, you know, maybe Avasarala has clarity of purpose, but those Martians seem pretty hell-bent on killing people. Some of those UN soldiers were, you know, like, why are we here? You know, I thought we were supposed to come here to kill them. Like, you do need to have, because, you know, yeah, you got this crisis on Ceres, but you also have the crisis on Earth. Like, you got to continue building these bridges both ways. and Monica is the voice of reason in the room. Who saw that coming? Remember how annoying she was in season three? What,
boy, the camera fingers guy. I didn't.
Yeah. Mm, yeah.
Didn't think I'd come around on her at all, but eventually, yeah, I did.
And it's not just the words and the fat cat. It's also the footage of Belters pulling, you know, UN troops out of wreckage, UN troops pulling Martians and mm-hmm. Martians helping like everyone. Like they're crafty in the way they shot these scenes. Like, I think every faction helped every other faction out. You know, nice. All the combinations of rock, paper, scissors were represented. And that's probably effective sympathy package. We'll see. We'll see if the sympathy bomb, what kind of positive damage it can do. Speaking of a strong spokesman for the rest of the belt, Drummer publicly shames and declares personal war on Marco Anaros before utterly despoiling one of his depots.
Is she gonna? Surely she's gonna take these supplies and give them back to Ceres, right? It's the only way that Ceres survives at this point, in my opinion.
I saw that they follow one of the ends of the tether flying off, and it's accompanied by a ship.
Uh-huh.
I'm guessing that this ship is going to accompany, like, that they plot a trajectory that's going to bring them close to Ceres, and like this thing is going to come in right as things are getting really bad. And it's a perfect solution. It's not the inners saving them,
right?
It's the Belters saving themselves.
But it's not Marco's Belters.
It's not
saving
Marco.
Them.
It's the Belters calling Marco out for his bullshit and saying, "I am the one that's actually going to help." And Belters helping Belters.
Yeah.
The inners are going to support. It's actually shaping up really beautifully.
This is kind of exactly what Avasarala needs.
Yeah.
And
she needs a
win. Had nothing to do with it, which I kind of like too. It feels like earlier seasons where things happen that are sort of out of control of the people who need those things to happen.
Yeah.
Or you know, just coincidences turn into game changing events. I like that stuff.
I was wondering if you could maybe spoil something from the books. I noticed that Michio had slapped a back to tank on Joseph's arm.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like there was like some kind of tint. Like, are they? I didn't think that they'd be well healed enough to regrow an arm. Maybe this is something they stole from Marco's depot, like some Martian regrowth tech. But like,
proto molecule back to tank. No,
I was
going to
say, do you know anything about
no,
the regrow? Okay, like I was wondering about that. Got to be an intentional nod to George Martin, if not the Double D's. But Drummer says, you know, you've sent you come after me, but yet I'm still unbent, unbroken, unbowed. These are the house mm-hmm. words of House Martell. If you've watched Game of Thrones, you know, Prince Oberyn. This harkens back to that. It's a deliberate reference. It's got to be a tip of the. It might be. I don't know if it's a respectful tip of the cap. It might be like, hey, look at us finishing our series in style. We finished a book series and we're getting two of the trilogies out. Boom, you know?
I mean, Martin could say, well, at least I finished a show and didn't get canceled twice.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't think it's a very good shot if it is a shot, but sure.
We're throwing stones and glass enclosures. Yeah, maybe. Right. But it's probably more friendly.
I think so. Yeah, they worked with Martin in some capacity.
Well, yeah, weren't they like? Didn't they get their start as like editors or of some of his stuff? So like this might be just like not even about the Double D's and the fucking HBO show, but just like a nod back to the old man himself.
I think so. I think it's friendly.
Meanwhile, Marco pours over ship designs while Rosenfeld gives him a dose of the cold, hard truth, for which he expects a rich reward, governorship of Medina Station after the war has been won.
Yeah, control of the choke point of the universe at that point. Yeah. No, that's a pretty big ask. I don't know. I can't really say much. I can't say much about this. It's all mildly interesting to me.
She's very ambitious. She sees a gap because, you know, Coral is dead. Sin is dead. Marco is sulking around below decks, doing maintenance work. No one is left to check him. And Marco's not one to be checked, but he needs it. So she steps up and does it. And just when, you know, he's in smack or down mode, she goes and asks for like the biggest jewel in the solar system. She's, you know, the ovaries on the on this lady.
Well, I like how she appeals to his ego here, right? Like, she does something to defy him, and she spins it to say that this is actually going to make you a bigger hero than you were before to these people. I've just helped you, you know, boost your image. And that's what exactly what he wants. It's the only thing he cares about.
Yeah. She puts herself in a spin and fires all PDC cannons, just shooting down this bullet. But she's really, you're right. She's
great at controlling him and manipulating him.
And controlling him by puffing him up and also, like, you know, defying him strategically. It's she's doing a really good job. And these scenes are just dripping with sexual tension, which I don't get because I don't. Like, what?
I mean, Marco is, right? Marco's a...
Yeah, Marco goes around with a lot of
sexy
swagger.
Sexy man, yeah. Sure. He's got
But, like, where's this going? Like, I don't know. I thought they were going to, like... But I always thought that from the beginning. It's like, okay, we got this super sexualized Belter second in command. You got the super sexualized Supreme Commander of the Free Navy. You know, Marco's always looking like a treat. Like, yeah, they're probably... There's a sexual tension project, but, like, they're not. So, like, I wonder why they injected sexual tension in the first place. Doesn't seem like it's going to pay off. Seems a little borderline unprofesh, but I don't know. Maybe that's part of her appeal. So is there anything else? Oh, I guess, yeah, that she's like also she saved him from himself because, you know, he's doing this dramatic raging out and she defied his orders to spare the captain of the Granica. But they do space the commander of the Loba.
That's the other thing about Rosenfeld. I feel like she's actually running she's running the war. She's running the Belter faction that is, you know, allied with the Free Navy at this point because she is manipulating Marco and she needs Marco in a way, right? Like Marco's image is not just self-serving for him. It's also something she's using as a tool to control the rest of the belt. So
yeah,
I feel like she's the one in actual power. She's the power behind the throne sort of thing. And they're doing a really good job of showing that and not necessarily like telling me that like, oh, I'm going to, you know, have aspirations to run this thing. She's just kind of doing it.
There's also, I think, it's just last year I watched the Dan Carlin's Hardcore History on the War in the Pacific, and I think that this campaign is on the belt is most closely relates to the island hopping campaign that you're, you know, the Allies are trying to secure each individual base for staging for more operations, and they're trying to frustrate that, including the attack on the mainland that was hoping to pin them down. Like, there's a lot of and one of the things that like didn't help to the Imperial Japan losing the war is that when their commanding officers would lose a battle, even when it was against overwhelming odds and there was really nothing they could do better, like it was seen as routine that they would commit suicide or, you know, be disgraced otherwise. And like even brilliant commanders are going to lose every once in a while. And if you take your best and brightest and you kill them after every defeat, you eventually get your second best and brightest, your third best and brightest, your inexperienced, your, you know, people are willing to tell bullshit and bravado. So like, I wonder if they're telling that a little bit too, that Marco is, you know, burning, his military candle at both ends. You know, not only are they incurring losses because they're against a larger supplied, better organized foe, but also when he gets them into trouble and they can't shoot their way out of, he blames everybody else. And now you got, second in command, taking it into battle next time. So I don't know. It might be a little interesting historical parallel. Then Philip sees Drummer's message along with the rest of the Pella's crew in the mess hall, and he's forced to improvise a Marco-esque rallying speech to keep morale strong.
Has Philip convinced himself actually that he's at a point of no return? Because essentially that's what he's saying in this, or is this all bluster and
it's
trying to make good on what Rosenfeld told him earlier and all that?
It's tough because there's two things happening here. Number one, the fucking new guy comes up and is like, you'll never believe. It looks like, we looked at the telemetry of this torpedo and it looks like it was disabled intentionally. Who would do that? And of course, you know, he sees it as like some kind of miracle, but you can see the wheel spinning of Philip. It's like, I know exactly the type of person that would do that. It's my mom. And I don't know. Like, I think he was just close, you know, like being handed firsthand evidence that his father's full of shit about Sirius people and they shouldn't have been abandoned. They're full of genuine Beltas, real Beltaloda. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, you know, his hated adversary spared him in the way that his father would never. Yeah. I thought he was right on there, but the unfortunately he found the intoxicating effect of narcissistic supply that, like, you know, I'm going to try to give a dad speech, and you can tell like that's the medication that's going to make all the pain go away as everybody looking to you for strength and support, and you're the one providing it. Like, I think he's gotten high off that supply, and we had one step forward, two steps back.
Yeah.
I don't know where this kid's going to land. I think narratively it's cleaner if he ends up, and I think we said this at the start of season 5, like, this is shaping up to where, like, I don't know that you can ever forgive a guy like Philip for all the sins he's committed, but a heroic sacrifice at the end, like a Darth Vader turning on the Emperor situation, sure, yeah, seems like it's the way to go. And with 2 episodes left, like, there's one more time for a one step back, and maybe it's even him synthesizing. If I put the big forehead take on this, like, he's synthesizing what Rosenfeld is saying and what his father said, and like, and he's like, ah, I need to get my dad's in back of my dad's inner circle so that I can better betray him. Like, is there any of that going on in the wheels? I don't think so. I think he's just sees his dad weak and a way for him to get back in his good graces. And he's still processing what he's learned about the torpedo. But maybe he's that smart.
I won't say what I was disappointed by, but I remember being profoundly disappointed with the way that Philip's storyline concludes in book 6.
Oh, no.
I haven't read beyond that. I don't know if there's more going on there.
Oh, no.
But I was profoundly disappointed is all I can really say without giving away too much.
Okay.
I hope they go a different direction. I hope they do something definitive and narratively satisfying like you're talking about, as opposed to just sort of doing what they did in the book, which maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this happened earlier, but I remember being disappointed.
Hmm. That's mildly interesting all around. Kamina's the drummer speech. Holy shit.
Yeah, we want to see the full thing here, right? We got a teaser of it earlier on in the less.
It's a message. It's a diss so nice. It's a diss so nice. They play it twice. You know, and getting to the unbroken, unbowed, unbent thing. It's like, you know, you stole from your own. You abandoned Sirius to the inner. You called yourself champion and then ran. So go ahead, raise your bounties, hunt me, kill me if you can. But know that you will always be. I will always be the one who took back what you stole. Live shamed, die empty. Kamina Drummer did this to you. Like, it is. Yeah, like, I love Walker's, like, so much for anonymity. Like, yeah, like, this is. Right. And it all stemmed from her having this really thoughtful look at Michio and Joseph. Like, you know, she's seeing him taking, like, I this is like, it feels like it's a place coming from love of Belters.
Yes, and these are the people
genuine
we're fighting
outrage
for.
At what a perversion of their religion culture that Marco represents. Like, yeah, inners suck, and we should never forget that. But this is not the way. You know, this is the opposite of the way. It's Belters for Belters.
Yeah, it's great. And the actor playing drummer, I can't remember her name at the moment. Is
Kara Gee?
Kara. Is it Gee or G? I don't even know.
Oh shit. I famously mispronounced things, so probably G.
I thought it was G. But she's fantastic in this. She always, like, it's such a weird dynamic. Her as an actor, her as a person, the actor, and then this character feels so different. She's such a good actor. Yeah. But man, she brings that authority and that self-righteous, or not even self-righteous, that just righteous anger.
Righteous, yeah.
Yeah, just straight up righteous. I loved it. I love the scene. I love the speech.
You know, they announced this last week, or this will be a couple weeks back in real time. We got time dilation. We were fucking out in the outer planets. But they announced that there's going to be a Telltale video game, and it looks like it stars Drummer.
Yeah.
I can't wait to play Bad Guy Drummer. Like, I mean, I don't even know what that looks like, because that's kind of how she starts off. Like, you know, catch a person dealing drugs on your station, space them. Like, she's a fucking pirate, and I'm looking forward to playing that game.
Me too.
So yeah, and then we've already talked about Philip. I think we're ready to let people go. Of course, this will be the last time. This is the last episode we kind of record in the darkness, in the void. We will be back in just a couple days next week with a feedback episode that we're going to be considering feedback from episode 3 and 4. Send in email to Beltaloda at baldmove.com if you'd like to be considered for that. And then we will be doing the final two episodes pretty much in pace with you guys. We'll have the episode out right as the episode drops around 7 p.m. Eastern, midnight GMT on Thursday. And then we will have the feedback episode out afterwards. So yeah, it'll be fun to we finally caught back up with you, and we'll be burning hard towards the penultimate and finale episode of the season.
Yeah.
Holy shit. It's still. Yeah. Yeah. We wouldn't even be halfway through a traditional season, and we're 2/3. It's crazy. So, but yeah, we'll have discussion of that and the latest episodes from the little X-ray mini series. We'll be having discussion of that, on our feedback episode coming out this next Tuesday. Beltaloda at baldmove.com. If you'd like to get us your thoughts, we will see you next week. And consider them. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.